Okay, so in the last year, we were discussing dating. No, this is not a share on science, on carbon dating, and the age of the universe. That is beyond the ken of my full and complete understanding, although it's worthwhile to have a share on that already if that interests you. It is not a share on agriculture and how to grow dates. That is also not because this year, I'm taking off this year from my agricultural work. And I'm spending the year in the yeshiva because it is the Shemitah year and I am no longer going to be working in the field. As a matter of fact, there's actually a movie that I ended up doing this year called The Field of Dreams.
Great movie.
You ever see that movie? Okay. That's what this year my field is, that I used to work the other 6 years. This year it's only in my dreams because this year I'm not working. This year I'm in yeshiva. Okay, so what type of dating are we talking about? With a girl. That's the way it's usually done in today's world. So last time we were basically talking about menschlichkeit, how important it is to be a mensch. So I want to preface the following remark, and that is, and this is very, very important, I really think, honestly, this is more important than anything in the world. Not anything in the world. One of the most important things in the world, and one of the most important things you're going to learn this year. And that is that our goal as Jews is to have families. It says that God doesn't dwell only amongst God. Now I'm speaking like a Gemara. God does not dwell only amongst. God only dwells amongst. Right when you see Ain and Ella in the Gemara, and you see in the same sentence Ain and Ella. How do you translate that?
Only.
Right. God only dwells amongst Mishpachos Hamiyuchasos Shev Yisrael, families, good kosher families. That's where God is. A guy wants to have God, you need a wife, and preferably children. It says that's where the Shekhinah dwells, right? We know there's Ish, Aleph Yud Shin, there's Isha, Aleph Shin Hey. If they know how to be married properly, you take the man's Yud, you take the woman's Hey, and what do you get? You get Ka. You get Hashem's name, a Yud and a Hey, which I'm not pronouncing for obvious reasons. And that's the presence of God. When a man and woman are together, there's God. When a man and woman aren't together, there isn't God. In the same way, obviously, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. But that is, so why do I have to say that? Because a lot of people think that, why am I getting married, which we're going to get to hopefully in the next year or more, we're getting married for, it's a French word, moi. I'm getting married for moi. It's not true. I'm getting married for Hashem. I think I'm getting married for me because I'm selfish and that's why I'm really getting married. Why should I be getting married? For Hashem. So let's see. If I'm getting married for me, when do I do something at my... What'd you say, Mojula? When I want to do it. When I want to do it. So right now, like for example, let's say my college career. Like right now, I'm pushing it off until possibly another lifetime, possibly never. Okay, those are the two options. Either another life. I'm pushing it off, but it's not for me right now. What about medical school? I think that's also going to have to wait. What about my career in Hollywood or in the NFL? Also not for right now. Not for me. Maybe another time. Maybe when I'm 45, I'm going to decide to maybe try out for the Tampa Bay Titans. Is there a team, Tampa Bay Titans? How about this? Maybe when the Tampa Bay Titans are born, I'll go out and try out for the Titans. But not right now. So people have the same attitude about marriage. And whenever I feel like doing it, I'll get married. But marriage is not only a right. Marriage is not only lots of fun. Marriage not only gives your life meaning. They say in English, there's an expression, pregnant with meaning. It literally makes your life pregnant with meaning. But, get it? All right, I guess not. But in addition, marriage also is an obligation. It is a chiyuv. It is a halachic obligation that devolves upon every male Jew from the age of approximately 17, 18. You say 18 lechup is really 17, so that really basically includes all the Shana Aleph guys as well, or certainly 18, and then until 20 we said there's a limit, and then we talked about the ages. That was, I think, the first year where we said maximum the Chazon Ish. It says maximum 24. Some say that's what the Chazon Ish said. Some say he doesn't hold at 24, he holds really until 20, but certainly not too long, and the only heter to push it off is either you're learning or serious emotional difficulties. I just happened to have been talking to a woman yesterday in her mid-20s who is not married, and she said that she's having dating problems. She went out with a guy, and he's a great guy. He never misses a minyan. He never misses a dafyomi. He's a real Ben Torah, a real... But he's not interested in getting married. So she's in her mid-20s, and he's probably in his late-20s, or maybe even his 30s already, right? But he's just, he enjoys his life. He says he likes going out in the middle of the night and going to get pizza. He likes, you know, to be a free agent. You know, he's like, no responsibility. There are a lot of people like that, that even though they're from, they officially follow halacha, but when it comes to marriage, they sort of compartmentalize, and it's not for me right now. I don't know, you know, how he deals with various natural inclinations that he might have. That's not for me to try to figure out how he deals with them, but it doesn't matter how he deals with them. He has a chiyuv to get married, and he can't say, I'm comfortable this way. When I'm, you know, later on, maybe one day in the future when I feel good about it. So it's a chiyuv, and people have to realize that it's a chiyuv. I was thinking, well, what's the guy? She said the guy never misses a daf yomi shir. What's daf yomi learning now? Ksuvus. What's ksuvus about? From daf beis till daf kuf yud beis, or wherever exactly it ends, yud gimel, dalet. So all it talks about is marriage. But that's a lot. That's just, you know, it's like learning kutchin. You know, you're learning about how to bring a carbon ola. So you know, it's not so practical, but it's interesting to learn about. So getting married isn't so practical, but it's interesting to learn about. But the difference is that Masechet Ksuvos is halacha l'maisa, and kutchin in the meantime is a dream, which hopefully we'll be able to fulfill very soon. So I urge everybody, for yourselves and for your friends, that everybody should realize that part of your obligation as a Jew is to be married. And also, it happens to be fun. You know, it's like eating on Erev Yom Kippur. It's a mitzvah, but it's a fun mitzvah. It's like sleeping on Shabbos afternoon. It's a mitzvah, but it's a fun mitzvah. It's like dancing on Sukkot. It's a mitzvah, but it's a fun mitzvah. Most mitzvahs I find to be, it's like living in Israel. It's a mitzvah, but it also happens to be nice to live in Israel. You know, Jerusalem is a very nice climate, and so many nice neighbors, 100 million nice neighbors, you know, you can just go up to them and, you know, get lynched if you want. All right. It's a mitzvah, but it's a fun mitzvah. Okay, so that was really just on the general issue of that, because it's a big problem. There are many, many, many singles, and some of them don't really want to get married. Now, when a person's at a stage where he's going out and he's meeting nice people, and he's not making the step, he has to find out if this is because he has emotional problems himself, or because he hasn't found the right person yet. Some people have a fear of getting married. I have a friend who had a very serious fear of getting married, and he went to a psychologist, as is the minhag ha'makom, and the psychologist told him a very interesting vort. The psychologist said that sometimes you're going up a tree, and there's a ball, you're playing ball, and the ball gets to the top of the tree, gets stuck on the tree. You understand, W, you have no idea what I'm talking about, because every second of your life you've been learning. But for those of us who play ball, Moshe is a quarterback, right? You're a great athlete, Moshe. Once happened once, he threw a touchdown pass, next thing you know, it's over the stadium walls. So you throw the ball, and it gets to the top of the tree. So what do? If you're a kid, you start climbing. Very good, Eliyahu Meir. You climb. But then when you look at high, what do? You look down and you say, "Ooh, this is scary." So what do? Eliyahu Meir doesn't want to hurt himself, because that'll be a mum. He won't be able to work in the Beis HaMikdash. So for the sake of the avod in the Beis HaMikdash, what does he do? He gets back down. Beautiful. Thank you, Eliyahu Meir. But then what does he do? He says, "But I want to play ball." So what does he do?
The broom.
Climbs back up. And then he looks down again. And no, it's not high enough for a broom, Shmuel. Shmuel, you'll stand there. You'll get it without even going on your tippy toes. But we're talking about us normal earthlings who are within the realm of natural height. So you're going to climb up again. And then what do you... And then you look down. Ooh. Right? You know, there's a famous Hasidic story. There were once a bunch of kids who were climbing up. They wanted to get to the top of this pole. And each kid started to climb, and nobody got to the top because they didn't get to the top. And then one kid climbed and he got to the top. So afterwards, this guy ended up being a famous Hasidic Rebbe. His father said, "How did you get to the top?" And all your friends didn't. He said, "Tati, when they started to climb up, they looked down and they became afraid." He said, "Me, I started to climb up and I just kept looking up. And when you keep looking up, you just want to get to your goal." So obviously, that was a metaphor for Avodas Hashem. Right? Some people, are, you know, they get high up. Ooh, where have I gotten? They're all afraid. How much they've accomplished and how much they've grown. They don't feel comfortable. So they go back down. But other people, they just keep looking up and they keep going higher and higher. What does that have to do with dating? Not all that much, although you can definitely tell the story on a date. That's why really all my shirim have a lot to do with dating, because I say a lot of things which at least I find funny, so you can use those on a date. Okay, so how do we get onto that? Oh, so you want the ball, but you also are afraid. So a lot of people go out, and they really want that goal of getting married, but then whenever they get close to it, they get cold feet, they become afraid, and then they step back. They, what is it called in the army?
They retreat.
Thank you. First they go out on a girl with the retreat, and then they retreat from the relationship. So they retreat. Okay? So that is a very serious problem a lot of people have. And you ask them, do you want to get married? They say, Father, of course I want to get married. So why aren't you married? Each time something happens. The answer is people have emotional problems getting married. I have at least two very good friends. One of whom is Miss Yeshiva. And the day of their wedding, all of a sudden they got cold feet. They couldn't go through with it. So one of them used to be in Yeshiva. His brother took him on a long walk and talked him into it. And the other one, the Kala, took him on a walk and talked him into it. You gotta go through with this. I'm afraid! So everybody has fears. Listen, I also have fears. Getting married, Baruch Hashem, was never a fear of mine, but a lot of people have fears. So you have to see, is that a fear that you have? And a lot of people need help. You need to speak to somebody, a rabbi, a therapist, to work these issues through. Because if you're not getting married for a while, it requires serious bedika. Why are you not getting married? Other people are always finding faults with other, you know, they need the perfect girl. Somebody once went to the disciple, and he said, oh, Rebbe, where's my zivu? And the disciple said, oh, Talmud, you met her 5 years ago, but you dumped her because her nose was a little bit too long. So some people are so picky that they never find a wife because they're looking for the perfect girl. Where does the perfect girl exist? In one place, ladies and gentlemen, in the realm of your imagination. That is the only place where the perfect girl exists. So therefore, when you get married, it's just a matter of deciding what... Oh, I always like when I have musical backgrounds in my speeches. What? Yeah, I can hear it. It's wedding music. It's very, very apropos. I'd like to wish a mazel tov to the couple and to the aunts, the uncles, the parents, the grandparents who came all the way from America to attend this event. I'm scared that I'm going to start doing the kazatska now, so I better continue talking. In the realm of your imagination is where she exists. So what is getting married essentially? Please remember, this is very important, because it always comes up whenever somebody's about to get married. All of a sudden, as they get to know her better and better, they start seeing more and more things, and they're looking. People are very picayune. They want to find all these faults with her, because this is the biggest decision of your life. And they find. If you search, you shall find. Okay? And then they don't want to go through with it anymore, because how can I marry a girl who has problem X? Because I know another girl who doesn't have problem X, right? There's always another girl without her problem. Her parents are divorced, and you know another girl, or another 5,000 girls, who come from a very nice home, the parents get along very well. She is okay looking, but you know another girl who's better looking. Or another 100 girls who are better looking. You want better looking? You can always find better looking, because beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, and human nature is that once you choose the girl, very often, because we're afraid, we start looking at other girls who then our eyes become better looking. So what is getting married? And getting married is, what faults are you willing to deal with? What faults are you willing to accept? In other words, every girl's going to have faults. Every girl's going to have shortcomings. There used to be a player from New York Knicks. His name was Pat Cummings. I actually once met him. We had a one-on-one in the park. He was very nice to meet you. So he said, tell all your friends that Pat Cummings beat you 2 out of 3 games in the park. You want to make me feel good? He let me win one of the games. I let him win 2 of the games. So the guy in the New York Post used to call him Pat Shortcomings. So the quote, because his name was Cummings, and he didn't, I asked him, what do you think about that sports writer? He wasn't so positive on him. Since he was Mechan Hashem L'Chavero, Chazal say, if you give your friend a bad nickname, Ein Lo Chelek L'Olam Haba. So maybe the sports writer lost his Chelek in Olam Haba for making the guy feel bad. He's a nice guy. Anyway, we should all be nice. So, how do we get on to shortcomings? What shortcomings are you willing to deal with? That's all. To say, you know what? My ideal girl was 5'5", 5'6", 5'8", I like taller. And she's 5'1". I'm willing to deal with that. You can be happy with a wife who's 5'1". Right? My ideal girl is, like, the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And she's very pretty, but, I went out with at least three girls who were better looking. You willing to deal with that? I think it's reasonable. I wanted a girl whose father's rich. So some people, they're stuck on it. Her father has to be rich. And this girl's father happens not to be so rich. In other words, I'm going to have to make my own living. I'm going to have to go to work and support the family instead of being a schnorr. You know what, guys? It's a good eitzah. I'm telling you right now. It's better not to take money. It's better to work and earn your own money, and then you don't owe them anything, and then they can take their Jewish noses and keep it out of your marriage. It's also good when the nose is a big nose or not a big nose. A lot of times when people get money from their in-laws and parents, then the parents and in-laws think that they have a say. There's an expression in Hebrew, Baal Hameya, or Baal Hadeya. It means the guy with the 100, the guy with all the cash, is also the guy with the opinion. Okay, so a lot of times they give you money, they have an opinion. Sometimes it's better, I'd say it's usually better, for one, to make their own living, and then, you know, you didn't take anything from them, you don't want anything from them, you respect them, you love them, etc., etc. But you don't owe them anything, and therefore they also don't feel they have the right to come in and meddle. A lot of in-laws meddle, and parents meddle, and that is heavy metal, right? And that is not a good thing, just like heavy metal. Okay, so that's the question. What shortcomings are you willing to deal with? So parents aren't rich, that I'm willing to deal with. Now let's say you have a whole list of like 19 different things. I have a friend like that, told me that he was engaged to a girl and it literally made him sick. Literally. He vomited and he couldn't go through with it. You know, she was dying to marry him. But it was just one thing and another thing and another thing. And when the list is too long, then you really have to start second-guessing yourself. Maybe I really shouldn't marry her. But is there going to be a list? There is going to be a list. Let's say there is no list. Let's say you don't have any list. All you see in her is good. What is that a clear indication of? You are living in a fantasy world. Could be you went out with her for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and all you see is the good. You're living in the fantasy world. And that brings me to a very important point. A lot of people idealize the girl. In other words, they have a picture of who she is. And this girl is not related at all to the real person she is. So I always say that the girl you marry and the girl you're married to after a year are going to be at best distant fourth cousins. At best. Through marriage. You know, like I always say, I'm Rav Eitan Cohen's cousin. How am I his cousin? Because my father's brother's son married his brother's wife's sister. So in other words, about 15 people had to get married in order to somehow connect us. Okay? In other words, my cousin is brother-in-law's with his brother. Okay? So are we really related? No. But somehow there were a bunch of marriages in there that connected us. So that is how close the girl who you actually married will be to the girl who you know after a year or two. Because you only really know the person after a year or two. And when you're standing under the chuppah, you have a picture of who she is. And the picture is not accurate. It can't be accurate because you only really know somebody when you live with them for a while. So therefore, that's why I stressed before in the previous urine that you should find out background information and not only base your decision on your own acquaintance with her and your own friendship and relationship, because there are a lot of things that you don't know. You don't know the way she acts at home necessarily. You don't know, you know, her deeper things. Remember, when you're out on a date, everybody's putting their best foot forward and everybody's trying to impress. So how can you find everything out? And she the same thing with you. She doesn't know you. As a matter of fact, they'll say even more. That a lot of times we don't know ourselves until after we get married, right? Because until now, you know, like the Stifler once said, he said that don't just marry somebody because he's a masmid. Well, I wouldn't, if I were you guys, I wouldn't marry anybody who's a masmid. But, get it? Good. But they say, oh, he's such a masmid, he's such a good learner, and he's a yeshiva, and he gives chaburas, and every third day the Magid Shir has to stop the shir because he has such good questions. He said, yeah. But a shtender, who's he been married to the last 8 years? A shtender. A shtender never asked anybody to take out the garbage. And a shtender never asked anybody to take a sick kid to the doctor. And a shtender never makes demands like a woman makes demands. So you need more than just a guy who's a good learner. So a lot of times when you're married, not only do you find out a lot about the partner, but you find out a lot about yourself. Because nobody ever made demands on you like a wife. And nobody can get under your skin like a... Well, nobody can get under your skin like a knife. But also, right? Nobody can get under your skin like a knife. Is that a good line? But also, nobody can get under your skin like a wife. Nobody can get under your skin like a wife. Okay? Remember that. So, then she's going to get under your skin invariably. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And then, how are you going to react now? So, when it was a guy in yeshiva, who cares? There are a million other guys in yeshiva. He's a jerk and you can forget about him. Can you just forget about your wife? No, no, no. and therefore, and not only that, but when you have a wife who's stuck, she's yours forever, and she's acting in this way, and it hits much closer to home. This is your wife. So then you see how you react, and you find out a lot about yourself. So you're going to find out a lot about her afterwards, and you're going to find out a lot about yourself. So remember that, that when you make the choice, remember that you're going to be in for a lot of surprises. The mashal I heard was that you go home from the wedding with a suitcase. Okay, you have your suitcase, she has her suitcase. And then after the wedding, little by little, everyone's opening up their suitcase and taking different things out. And you find out a lot of things about yourself and about the other person. I even know it from yeshiva. I know the way guys are in the Beis Medrash and to their friends. And you see the way a guy can be very sweet and this and that. And then I find out what's going on behind the scenes. Right? A lot of times you hear things and you know things, or even people will tell you things that makes you realize that he's not the person you thought he was. And we're all very multifaceted. Is that a superfluous word? Multifaceted? Very multifaceted. Can I just say multifaceted? But I wanted to stress that we have many facets, many, many facets to us. So we're very multifaceted, and we're going to find out things about ourselves and also about the girl. So remember that. You went on to you love her. She's unbelievable. But it's very likely you're going to find out afterwards. You're going to find things that are less believable, that are more believable about her, that are less believable. Now, it looks the other way as well. Could be that after marriage, a lot of good is going to come out that no one ever realized. And you're going to see, wow, I thought I married a great girl. She's 100 times better than I thought. We hope. And not only that, and this is a big yisod, and this is really the number one question that I tell people to ask before they get married, themselves, about the partner, and themselves about themselves. Is the person a ben aliyah or a bas aliyah? What does that mean? Does it mean that the person has Zionist proclivities? Lockdown. Not necessarily. That is nothing, I'm not talking about that type of aliyah. I'm talking about a person who wants to grow and who wants to improve. And I can't stress this enough. When you're standing under the chuppah, hopefully you're about 20, 21, and she is about 19, 20. Okay? Now, 19, 20 is just the beginning. We have just left childhood, and now we are starting adulthood. Just the beginning. Our self-awareness, our self-consciousness, our understanding of the world, of life, what's important, of values, it's just beginning to develop and crystallize. Okay? That's why yeshiva is so important, that it's a good time in your life. When you're 18, 19, perfect. This is when you're coming into your own, you're becoming adults, and this is the best time to become a Torah. So, if a person has reached Shleimus at 19, 20, then what does that person have? Everybody gets together for this person's funeral. Who said that? Yosef. You're a very wise man. Wise well beyond your years. Funeral. A person who reaches Shleimus has a funeral. Okay, is that clear? When you've reached perfection, it's time to go. As long as you're here, there's still what to fix. Okay? There's even a famous story like that about the somebody once went up to the Kutzker and said, oh, please daven for this person. He's such a tzaddik, etc., etc., etc. And the Kutzker said, ah, he's a nothing. He's not a tzaddik. He doesn't know how to learn. Doesn't know this. He doesn't know that. And then in the end, the person had a refuah shleima. And after he asked the Kutzker what he was saying, or the Talmidim explained, that what he meant was really also a Yerushalmi, that as long as he was saying that he's so great, Shemayim, there was a kitchur, that he's so great, he can die. So I was saying that he's not so great, so that in Shemayim, they should say that he deserves more time. So there's a lot to grow when you're 18, 19, 20 years old. And therefore, it doesn't matter what she's really like under the chuppah. It doesn't matter that you have one image of her, and there's really a lot more there that you don't see. Because she's working on herself, and she's going to improve. And you also, you know yourself, we hope, well enough to know that maybe you're not really worthy of her, and there's a lot that you have to improve. But heck, you're only 20, 21 years old. You have years. Every day for the rest of your life, you're going to have a Musar Seder. And every day, you're going to doubt it three times a day, and you're going to always do Hisbonenus, and you're going to learn Chasidus, and you're going to be an Oved, and you're really going to continually improve. So you're going to be, if you think you're getting a good girl when she's 20, if she's a Bas Aliyah when she's 30, Aplei Vafelik, Avali. When she's 40, even better. When she's 50, and that's what we do. Who's Rav Katz? Rav Katz is the conglomeration or the accruing of 70 years of very intense avoda. Every day Rav Katz is working to improve his Avodas Hashem, his Yiras Hashem, his Avas Hashem, his Avas Abrios, his Nidos. He's constantly striving higher. So you think the Rav Katz we have today is the same as the Rav Katz 15 years ago? No. And the Rav Katz 15 years ago was a lot better than Rav Katz 15 years before. And I guarantee you, when he was 20 years old, he was no slouch either. But it's just constantly working on yourself. And therefore, if you meet a girl who's constantly working, you have nothing to worry about. Because if any issue ever comes up, she says, yes, that's a problem I have, and I'm working on it. Period. And if you marry a girl who says, this is the way I am, and you have to accept me for the way I am. Right? In the secular world, people are working on, they're working on themselves, working on their character, they're working on their faith in God, on their value system. They're always assessing, are my values in the right order? Am I approaching this relationship the right way or that relationship the right way? No. People just live. They live based on instinct, based on what they think, and that's the end of it. What does a real Jew do? A real Jew every day says, okay, I have a relationship with my mother. How can I improve that? I have a relationship with my father, my siblings, my friends. How can I become a better person? Where am I cheating myself? Where am I fooling myself? Where am I not? Is my learning really a learning? Do I remember what I'm learning? Am I doing it just to be yotze? Am I doing it to impress my rabbin? Or am I doing it because it's the right thing to do? Etc., etc. We're constantly working on ourselves. That's our attitude. And that also has to be her attitude. Other people say, no, even religious girls sometimes. I mean, I usually speak a lot more to boys than to girls, so I hear it from the boys. No, she says that she thinks this is the right way. And that's it. She's not interested in changing. Even though there might be a different way, like let's say, give you an example that comes up sometimes, is a TV. So obviously, even though our yeshiva, in the name of the yeshiva, it already has the letters TV, right? But it's really no TV Arye. Okay? No TV Arye, right? So obviously, a boy who graduates from this yeshiva doesn't want to have a Kli Mashus in his house, a Gilei Arayos, Shvichus Dama, Avodah Zarah, there's Pritzus, there's Nivel Peh, there's everything you don't want to see, and you certainly don't want your children to see. Until the age 10, they're going to see 14,000 acts of sexual intercourse. They're going to see 11,500 acts of violence. They're going to hear 29,863 bad words. And that's only one kid who counted, told me. He was counted until the age of 10. I made that up. But they have all these statistics about how much garbage you're going to see on the TV. The guy doesn't want it. He's studying his sheep for 2 years. This is beneath me to watch this trash. It's pornography. Watch a man, he's lying on top of a woman, they're grunting and they're groaning, they're making all these noises, there's music in the background, they're in it. What is this? It's pornography. And they have it, some saying this is national TV. In the olden days, when I was a kid, when I was, you know, a little kid, when I was a bigger kid already, it was on TV. But when I was a little kid, for that you had to go down to Midtown Manhattan to Times Square, and then they had a big sign up, you know, with a movie, I don't want to say, you know, an average name of such a movie, and then they had a picture of a Kruitzer there, of Zelna, and then, you know, guys would go in and sneak in, and then they'd watch the movie, and then that was where they got their pleasure. And today you have it on TV. So obviously, Yeshiva Bachur doesn't want a TV. But for a girl, the seminary she went to, they didn't have me speak about this topic, so she never heard about how terrible TV was, and she thinks it's a nice thing. Her father has a TV. His father had a TV, her uncles, her aunts, her cousins. And who doesn't have one? When you buy a house, you buy beds, you buy bookshelves, you buy a fridge, you buy an oven, you buy a dishwasher, and you get a TV. So she wants one and you don't want one. So there are two types of girls. There's one type of girl who says, listen, there's nothing wrong with it, and we're going to have one. And that's the end of it. It's a big problem. Because then she's saying, not only because of that issue, I'm talking about the attitude. The attitude is, this is the way it is, and I'm not willing to see it any other way. The other option is, she says, listen, I know that you think it's a problem. I, in the meantime, don't fully understand why. So I'll speak about it with Rabbeim and my teachers and people I admire. And in the meantime, I really need one. I'm connected to it. But after a while, if they convince me that it's the wrong thing, and if I'm able to separate myself from it, then we'll get rid of it. And I'm willing to grow. I'm willing to try it out. It could be that she won't be matzliach. Maybe she'll have one for many years to come. But she's willing to try, she's willing to grow. And I'm just giving that as an example. It could be one or two guys in the room thinking, yeah, I'm the guy who wants the TV. But maybe she won't want. So you can tell her the same thing. That you're willing. Let's say you say, Yeshiva, I did hear from somebody who claimed that it's not the greatest thing in the world. It doesn't help bring you close. Nobody ever claimed that it helped bring you closer to Hashem. That I haven't heard yet. Right? Somebody said, I once heard a rabbi giving a whole shiur about how he watches TV. In the middle of the shiur in the course, yeah, I watch TV, this and that. I was thinking, he's trying to justify it. So I was thinking, my sweet friend, you have a set of shots in your house, right? Avi has a set of shas. So he likes to count how many times he finished shas. So if you have a set of your shas, and you had a TV, what do you think gives Hashem more pleasure? What do you think? When you're sitting in front of a Gemara, or when you're sitting in front of the TV? So Baruch Hashem, I don't have such an insight, because my wife won't let me have a TV. So that is that. So let's say you're the guy who wants the TV. Say, listen, in the meantime, I'm really connected to it. I heard it's not the best thing in the world, but I'm willing to grow, and hopefully in 5 years, I won't want one anymore. When I was 18, somebody would have told me this. I would have said, you know, listen, sorry, I like Judaism. My mother's Jewish, and her mother is Jewish, all the way back to Sari Manum. But I can't give up on it. I like to watch. I like sports. I like this. I like that. So, but eventually, hopefully, I'll get to the Madrega that I won't want it anymore. I won't be interested anymore. I'll see it as filth. You know, Rav Nemitzel doesn't have a Yetzer Hara not to go to the movies. If you have such a Yetzer Hara, you can say, listen, if you go to a movie on a Saturday night, you say, I'm going to the movie. I know it's not the ideal thing for a yeshiva student to do on a Saturday night, but I'm growing, and hopefully in 2 months from now, or 6 months from now, or in a year from now, I won't want to go to the movies anymore. There's more than one Rosh Yeshiva who saw movies when he was young. And when you're young, you do things. It's hard to separate, but hopefully eventually I'll grow out of it. So that is all that. Okay, so that is a girl who's a Bas Aliyah, who wants to grow, and even if she's not holding there right now, even things you know, things you don't know, as long as she's willing to grow, you have nothing to worry about. If she's not willing to grow, if she's set in her ways, then she's dangerous. Because even if she's set in her ways and you like her ways, you're going to find ways you don't like afterwards, and then you're not going to be able to change her, because she might be stubborn. Now, also, as you get older, it gets harder to get married. So somebody who says, yeah, when I'm 28, I'll start playing the field. As you get older, you get more set in your ways, and I know older married people, and it's not a happy story. So that's another incentive, if you need one, to get married. Right? When you're young and you don't want, the girls might want, and you don't want, you're not interested now. And then when you're older, the girls aren't so interested anymore, and now you want, and you're stuck. Also, Rav Avraham Shapira, who's that Sal, who was Nifta recently, so he said when you go out on a date, you should smile a lot. Why should you smile? He said he has a theory that Avraham Avinu used to smile. Why? Because he said it's a chesed to smile. When you smile at somebody, they feel good. Try it. Just go smile at dinner. Go see one of your friends. Hey! Give him a smile. And see that 99 out of 100 times, he's going to smile right back at you. I'm not saying in that spot, he's going to smile 99 times out of 100. But I'm saying, if you do this trick 99, 100 times, 99 times the guy's going to smile. So when you're with your friends, even also, it applies not only to a girl, but in general, when you're with your friends, it's a good thing to smile. Now, what really, I wanted to finish dating and get to marriage, because we've basically not covered dating, but in the amount of shiurim that I'm afraid that eventually I'll lose people. So I want to get to marriage, because marriage is really more important than dating, because dating only lasts for a shorter period of time, and marriage for a longer period of time. So Mirtza Hashem, next week, we will move on to marriage. So first, before we get to marriage, I want to talk about my favorite topic, love. Love! All you need is love! That's what the Beatles said. But it's not true. That's not all you need. Believe me. If a person has love, but it doesn't have a respiratory system, it's not going to get him very far. Okay? So, you need love. You need a lot of other things also. Says the Navi. I never get an opportunity to learn a little Navi with the guys, so I want to learn a little bit of Navi for the last few minutes. Avshalom, the son of David, had a very pretty sister, and his name was Tamar. Her name was Tamar. As I'll say, what is love that is tluy of a dover, that is dependent on other factors, that doesn't last? The love of Amnon to Tamar. Tamar never loved Amnon. But Amnon loved Tamar. Vayelveha Amnon ben David. So you have this guy Amnon, and Amnon loves Tamar. Vayetzer la'amnon l'schalos b'avor Tamar achoso, ki besulahi. Amnon got sick over this Tamar, his half-sister, and she was a besula. Chazal say, Hakina v'ataiva v'akavad motzinas adam in olam. He became lovesick. Why did he become, when does a person become lovesick? When you idealize the other person, and you say, you think that there's something, you're sure that they're going to make you happy, and then you're sick until you get them. Now, who did Amnon really love? Amnon was completely in love and infatuated with Amnon. However, in order to please Amnon, Amnon had sexual desire, and Amnon was sure that if he would be able to get Tamar where he wants her, he would now be a happy person. So much so that he got sick. Okay, so if you're getting, usually that's not a good indication. Okay, when somebody is completely obsessed, completely smitten, so a lot of times it shows they're not living in the world of reality. They're living in the world of hakina v'taiva v'kavod, that jealousy, sexual desire, lust, and honor take a person out of this world. Amnon was out of the world. A sick person is not. Mara would say that he's not in the metzias. He's living in a different world. Like Mara says, malikut l'kula, malikut l'palaga. When you injure somebody, it's like killing them. Because when you injure somebody, you're half killing them. Right? So it says that then he got mommy sick for her. And Amnon had a friend, but the Mefarshim point out that with friends like this, you don't need enemies. And his name was Yonadab ben Shima, the brother of David. And Yonadab was a very wise guy. Yonadab knew how to get what he wanted. And he said to him, "Hey, what are you looking so bad for? In the morning you look bad. Tell me." Right? And he brings down here in the Sefer, very good Sefer on Novi. If you want to learn Novi, it's called Mishpesot Zav. Took from hundreds and hundreds of different svarim, and he gathered them together, and on each pasuk he writes interesting ideas, some Kabbalah, some Musar, some Hasidus, some Pshat Psukim. Very, very good Sefer to learn Navi with. In any event, here he brings that that Chazal say not to visit a sick person in the first 3 hours in the morning. Because after a good night's sleep, the person feels better, and therefore you're going to go visit him at the beginning of the day, you're not really going to daven for him because he looks good. So here also, Amnon was early in the morning, I've woken up, and Amnon should have looked good, I guess, you know, after he, you know, fixes his hair and washes his face. Now Amnon looks good. And he said, it's the morning, and you look rotten, you look lousy. Tell me. And Amnon said, it's Tamar, the sister of Avshalom, my brother, whom I love. So Yehonadab said to him, listen, I have an idea for you. Lie in bed, look sick, your father's going to come to see you, tell him that you want Tamar to feed you. And then she's going to make the food in front of you. You want her to make the food in front of you so that I should see and I should eat from her hand. And Amnon did that. He pretended, he feigned illness, he pretended he was sick. And the king came to see him. And Amnon said, let Tamar come and let her make a couple of pancakes for me, Livy vote. And I'll eat from her hand. So he sends in Tamar, says, your brother Amnon is sick, and make him a meal. So Tamar goes to the house of Amnon, and he's lying down, and she bakes the pancakes, fries them, and she says to, she describes all of the process she goes through. Vatikach es habotzeg, vatolosh, vatalabei v'leinav, vatitzok lefanav, and then he said, I can't eat. He said, I can't eat unless everybody leaves the room. All the trick in the book. And everybody leaves. And then Amnon says to Tamar, please bring the food to my room, and I'll eat from your hand. So Tamar is a good half-sister. She's a good woman, good Jewish girl. She does what he asks. And he says, do me a favor, Tamar. Not a favor. Shichbi imi achosi. Right? Lie next to me. Right? Why lie next to me? So the Kriyak already says he didn't even plan to sleep with her. He just said, I'll just have the hana of her lying next to me in bed. Like Yosef and Eshes Potiphar, right? She just said, lie next to me. I don't even want to be with you. Just lie next to me. But that's what the Yetzer says. The Yetzer tells you, first, just lie next to me. And then in the end, there's a bad ending. And she said, my brother, don't do this. It's disgusting. Please. And I'll be so embarrassed. And you'll be so low. How can you do this? And he wouldn't listen to her. He grabs her. And he rapes her. And now we get to the key pasuk, sweetest friend. Shmuel Beis, Parakut Gimel, Pasuk Tesvav. Vayisna'eho Amnon sina gedola me'od. Ki gedola ha-sina asher sneo me'avo asher aheva. Amnon hated her excessively, and he hated her even more than he loved her. In other words, he loved her so much, he got sick over her, and then he hated her even more than he loved her. Can you imagine? Ever been love sick, you know, like, oh, mom, she's obsessed. Here, he was obsessively hateful. Vayomer la Amnon, kumi lechi, get out of here, he said there. And then she said, oh no, how can you do this to me? And now you're going to send me away. And she was so ashamed. She left, right? He called the nar in, said, kick her out of here. They locked the door after her, okay? And then she was wearing the garments that a virgin used to wear. And then they threw her out, and she ripped her clothing. She put ashes on her head, and she was just walking around crying about her faith. Okay, and then Avshalom found out what happened, and you can read the exciting end to the story on your own. But I just want to stress that thing about Ava and Sina. When you love somebody, because you love yourself, you're only going to love them as long as they make you feel good. Amnon loved Tamar because she was the object of his desire. And as long as he had that desire, she was for him pleasure. The moment he did what he did, and how do you feel after you do an Aveira? You feel rotten about yourself. So every time he thinks of Tamar, what does he think about? How much of a louse he is. How much of a scoundrel. He's a rotten individual. So now he's looking at Tamar, and he's seeing his own rottenness. And that makes him feel terrible. So until now, she made him feel good. In his imagination, he was excited, there was lust. He loved her. Then afterwards, she didn't make him feel good. So how does he feel now? He hates her. He despises her. Who does Amnon love? Amnon loves Amnon. Like a friend of mine once said to another friend, you don't need any other present for your birthday other than a mirror. Amnon, all he needed was a mirror. Was a whoop! Right? Like the ones in the movie. Hard to get happy after that one. Right? He doesn't love anybody but Amnon. You know, like the Olam says, a person goes to this restaurant and he said, the waiter said, what would you like to order? And the guy said, I love fish. So he brings him the fish. Now, if he loved fish, what would he do with the fish? He would kiss the fish. He would play music for the fish. He would talk to the fish. He would make movements of his lips. You know, so the fish would, you know, it's an, oh, the fish, no, you're making like me now. A person doesn't love fish. Why? Because what does he do? He takes a knife and he stabs the fish in the back. He stabs him again. He starts cutting him into small pieces. And then he literally eats him up. You know, like one team ate the other team. Literally eats him. Who do we really love? Fish. I like to tell the story of Rav Aviner Shlita from Yeshivas Ateres Kohanim downstairs. So he tells once, and he's got a lot of books about love and dating and marriage, and I highly recommend the last year our good friend Rav Melech translated his book on Shmiras HaBris. Okay, so he tells a story about a boy who once went up to him and he said, Rabbi, I don't know what to do. I'm in love with a girl and she's not interested in me. Right? I think I told you guys the story in the first year. And then he says, so what's the problem? Love her. What's the problem? No, Rabbi, you don't understand. I love her. She's not interested in me. I said, I don't understand. What's your problem? Love her. Love her. Who's stopping you? He said, Rabbi, you don't understand. I'm really interested in her, and she doesn't want to go out with me. So the rabbi said, this is love. He said, Rabbi, you don't understand. He said, no, you don't understand. You don't love her. If you loved her, you know what you would do? You would take her name and her mother's name, and you go to the Kotel 40 days and daven for her. You would send her food packages, whatever she likes. Girls, chocolate. That's what I'm told. You would send her chocolate. Not all the men. You would send her chocolate. Not only that, if you really loved her, you would try to set her up with a really good guy. You'd find a guy from the yeshiva who's a better guy than you and set her up with him. And this way she'll be happy because you love her. Who do you really love? You love yourself. And you think that you're going to have pleasure if she's interested in you. But I just want to make that clear. That when you love somebody, very often, unfortunately, we mistake love for somebody else for love for ourselves. We do that with our parents also. We love our parents because they make us feel good. They support us, and they take care of us, and they give us a sense of security, and a sense of being taken care of, and everything that a parent gives a child. The list goes on and on, and nobody can provide what our parents can provide for us. That's why we love our parents. What happens when a parent isn't, putting up? They say, put up or shut up. Isn't that an expression? Parent isn't producing. How does the kid feel towards the parent? How many times have I heard this one? I hate my mother. Why do you hate your mother? You hate your mother because you love yourself and she isn't giving you what you need. So you never really loved your mother and now you don't really hate your mother. It's all about your, well, you do really hate your mother, but it's all about, it's nothing to do with your mother. It all has to do with yourself. And you say, no, 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 she's not a good person. She doesn't take care of her child. So interestingly enough, a lot of times you look at other people's parents, and they might be really lousy parents, but you don't feel feelings of hatred towards them. Why? They are not doing their job either. What's the answer? That it never affected you. It's all about me. Narcissism. And that's basically the way we're created. It's natural. Our job as B'nai Torah and as human beings, even before that, Derech Eretz Kadmah LaTorah, is to try to overcome that. It's to try to get to the point where you can really love another individual. Now, what happens when a couple gets divorced? Were they in love when they got married? Look at the wedding pictures. You will see them embracing, holding hands, the pictures, the excitement. This is the greatest day of my life. And then, a year later, 2 years later, 5 years later, they're in the basement. He's giving her a get. And it's a sad day for all. What happened? Usually, what happened was, I used to think when I got married that she's going to make me happy. And so I loved her for what she did for me. And I told her 1,000 times that I loved her. But now I see that she doesn't give me, I see that other, maybe somebody else can make me happier than I meant. Or I see that she's not giving me the happiness that I need. So frankly, I don't love her anymore. Now I hate her. That's the way it goes. They go like Amnon. Amnon did it in 15 minutes. But they go from love to, from feeling, until now she made me feel good. She bore my children, etc. But now she's the object of my enmity, of my animosity, because now she gets the kids. That's the way the systems work usually, the court system. She gets the kids. She reminds me that I can't be with, it's because of her that I can't live with my children anymore. Because of her, I have to make all these payments. And now, I hate her. So, it was never about her in the first place. It was about you from the beginning, and it's about you from the end. And you only modified your feelings towards her because of how she made you feel about yourself and about your own life. And that's the story of Amnon. And it's worthwhile remembering that, because a lot of times when people mistake, oh yeah, I really love this girl. Really, tell me something. If tomorrow she called you up and she told you that as happy as she is with you, she found somebody she's twice as happy with, and the relationship is officially over, you still love her as much? Ooh. See, blood, our body is filled with blood. All of the blood starts going to the boy's head, and he's fuming. Not only does, from loving her, he goes to hating two people. Her and that guy, right? Because now the guy she's with, what does he remind him of every time he sees the guy? That because of him, I'm not getting my pleasure of the girl liking me anymore. Okay? So that's really what our lives are about. And when we have relationships, if you want to have true relationships, you should constantly ask yourself, is it about how I feel, or is it about the other person? I remember once I went to visit a sick person, and the person was in really, really bad shape, and eventually he died. And somebody went in to visit him, they said, I want to visit him. So she goes in, and she's like, do you remember me? And he wasn't so lucid, and he didn't show signs of recognition, and she was very offended, like she walked out of there, and she's like, you know, oh, you remember me, and she, I'm like, lady, obviously I didn't say this, but I was thinking, did you go in to visit him to make him feel good, or to make you feel good that he still remembers you and you can make that connection? Obviously, I would have asked you, you're going in for him, right? But ultimately it was about you. It would have made you feel good to visit him because we feel good about ourselves when we do something nice. And it would have made you feel good if he remembered you, because that shows that you're an important person and that you're significant. That's what somebody's saying if they remember you. You remember important things. And now that he didn't remember you, he was showing that, you know, you had a passing acquaintance and now you weren't important enough to remember, you don't feel good. So it really wasn't about you. It was about the other people. You see that a lot in relationships. As long as I have pleasure being this guy's friend, I'm going to be this guy's friend. When I don't have pleasure being his friend anymore, I'm not going to be his friend. That's not the way you should be somebody's friend. You should be somebody's friend in order to, right? In order to be a friend. I like to quote Rabbeinu Yonah. He says, what's the derech that says a Pirkei Avos you should choose for life? One of the things he says a Pirkei Avos is a good neighbor. So Pashut Pshat is that you should always try to find good neighbors. Rabbeinu Yonah says that you should be a good neighbor. The derech to be in life is, am I a good neighbor? Not is my neighbor a good neighbor. Thing with calling. Why should I call him? He doesn't call me. If that's the relationship, it's all about, does he make me feel good? If you have a friend, do you think he'd appreciate a phone call? Pick up the phone, don't stand on ceremony. People start, keeping score. So Mirtz Hashem, next week we will continue our talk of love, which will lead us into marriage, which will clearly lead us into lives of simcha.
2, 3, 4.